What does true wellness mean to you? I'm Claudia Cometa, and that is the question I will be leading with in the Minding Wellness podcast. Each and every week, I will bring you experts who will share their personal wellness journeys and their insights into what it means to mind our wellness. Health is a state of body. Wellness is a state of being. Let's dive into improving our state of being. Today on the podcast, I have Claire Snaiman. Claire is a patient advocate with lived experience from the brain tumor community with a passion for inspiring people to put their health in their own hands. Since being diagnosed in 2010 with a non-malignant brain tumor and brain surgery in 2012, she realized the importance of partnering with her healthcare team and becoming her body's own advocate. She is an author, speaker, blogger, and advocate for patient and healthcare collaboration. I absolutely loved our conversation and can't wait to bring it to you. All right. I am super excited today to have Claire Snaiman with me. It is such a serendipitous way that I came across Claire. I have recently been a little bit more active on LinkedIn, and she came across my screen just based on, I think, a mutual connection, and her TEDx talk was shared. And so, of course, I, knowing that it was about patient experience and her own experience, clicked on it and watched it and then immediately reached out. So I am so excited she was willing to come on here and share her insights and story. So thank you so much for being here, Claire.
Thank you so much for having me on today. I'm thrilled that we could connect. It definitely was serendipity. You are totally right. I think we definitely have some things in common, and I'm looking forward to chatting to you about them today.
Yes, me too. So as I start with all of my guests, I ask, what does true wellness mean to you?
I think that is a fantastic question to start off with. And I think, you know, I was thinking about it and I was like, wow, I think that's something we all strive to do. And it's often, it's a hard thing to do, because for me, I think of it as it's a holistic state, really. And I find it's this balancing act, and it's something that I try and do. Oh gosh, I try to do on a daily basis, but it's not just a daily basis. I find that this is something that's continual for me, and it's a dynamic state, really, because it changes for me depending on the state of my life, the circumstances around me. But it really is true wellness for me is trying to find that balancing act between physical wellness, mental wellness, and just trying to live my life to the best possible extent that I can. So I think that's really what true wellness for me means.
Yes, absolutely. I'm with you on that. And some of the words that stood out to me are continual and dynamic. And I absolutely agree with that. I feel like it is basically second by second, because things change that quickly in our lives. So sometimes we just need those reminders, you know, and it's a continual process. I absolutely agree. Well, your story is super powerful, and I know that we definitely could spend quite amount of time on it. And I am going to post the link in the show notes to your TEDx talk for anybody who wants to maybe fill in any details on your story that we might not get to here. But if you could give us kind of just a background of what has gone on in your life and what has led to you to where you are today.
Absolutely. Sure. Thank you. So it really all began for me in, gosh, when was it? 2010. I was a mother of a young child, and I had the sudden onset of vertigo and migraine, which I'd never really had before ever in my life. And to cut a long story short, I was diagnosed after that with a non-malignant brain tumor, which was not what we expected at all. We actually thought it was meningitis, and they did a CT scan, so a brain scan, and found that I actually had this non-malignant brain tumor. And so as you can imagine, it really turned things completely upside down for us as a family. For me, though, the treatment was basically what they call wait and watch, which means yearly MRIs to monitor the tumor. And I had medications, I saw multiple specialists, but surgery was not an option for me at that stage because of the sort of the risk benefit perspective. And so I had my yearly MRIs, and then about 2 years after my diagnosis, so in, when was that, 2012, I actually fell acutely ill with vertigo attacks and basically this migraine that would not budge after my sort of regular migraine medications and changing medications that I worked with my physician. And we just couldn't get this thing to move. And I, you know, spoke to my neurologist, and what had happened is my brain tumor had actually doubled in size, and it was blocking the flow of the fluid in my brain, and my brain had started to swell. And so I had to have brain surgery to remove the tumor to allow everything to return to normal status. And I suppose what I can say is that my change from being what I call a routine patient in 2010, you know, where I'd go to the doctor for, you know, cold, flu, a couple of other things, to being more of a non-routine patient, someone who had multiple specialists and multiple medications and multiple conditions, really changed the way that I looked at healthcare. And I had to really start to navigate a very complex system. And also what happened when I was acutely ill, I did fall through a few little loops in the system. And this really, once I had recovered from my brain surgery, which took me a significant amount of time, took me over 18 months, it really led to me figuring out and going, how did I get through my surgery? How did I get to getting the right care? Well, I'd become quite a powerful advocate for my body and for asking questions and tracking my symptoms and medications. And I thought, you know, how can I share this message and this sort of lived experience that I had gained over my patient journey to help others who were also trying to navigate this very complex system of healthcare? And so that is where I sort of took my patient experience and channeled it. And that's what I'm doing today.
So powerful. And I see so many parallels, although, you know, for me, it was taking care of my dad, but so many mm-hmm. parallels in turning an experience that we had into a benefit to others, because, yes. you know, when you get this just uprising of this can't just end here. There right. has to be something else. So your story is so powerful. And I think that it's so important because, you know, many of us, especially, you know, maybe young entrepreneurs, we sort of, it's easy to take our health for granted. We're young. We feel like, you know, yeah. we've got, you know, many decades left. We feel healthy. And when something like this comes about, it shakes you to the core. And for those who have not yet watched your TEDx video, I definitely encourage them to, because you can see the emotion as you speak it, as you speak the story. And it really is, of course, it's a terrifying thing to happen mm-hmm. to what you call as, you know, a routine patient, as many of us, you know, in our younger years are. And so you're presented with this, what do you mean brain tumor? In fact, it takes me back to when I heard the diagnosis of my father, and I immediately thought, well, you've got somebody else's scans. Like, that's yes. not even possible. And yes. so you've got this, you know, this well up of emotion, of denial, of all of the things. So okay. You get this scary diagnosis and you're told to watch and wait, which of course probably at that time sounded, you know, what do you, like you kind of want, I'm sure wanted yes. a little bit more of a solid and concrete answer or a treatment plan. And so what kind of was going through your mind at that point?
You know, it's quite a bizarre thing. You're right, because you almost want an instantaneous something to do. Like, well, I'm not sure if I can watch and wait with something inside my brain that shouldn't really be there. And to be honest with you, that was one of the hardest things I had to deal with, was the emotional side of having something inside my head that shouldn't be there mm-hmm. and no sort of treatment options to deal with it. However, at the same time, I did actually get second opinions on this, and they confirmed, they said, no, this is the right treatment approach. You know, until it gets to a size that makes sense to actually remove it, the risk of going in for surgery outweighs the benefits. And then I sort of got around through various, you know, thinking about it, getting the right healthcare team on board, the right opinions. I came to the consensus myself, and it's really some internal work that has to happen mm-hmm. where you start to feel confident in the opinions around you that yes, this is the right way forward. But once I got to that, then I started to feel comfortable with what was going on. But, you know, the thought of brain surgery was quite terrifying, to be honest, at the beginning, because it wasn't like, I myself have fractured my hip before. I've had a couple of other surgeries prior to this. But the thought of somebody actually going into my brain was quite surreal. And so I really wasn't prepared to go down that route, to be honest with you. But when the time came where I knew I had to have brain surgery, I actually was in a place that I knew this was my only option. I had no other option. I was ill enough at that stage where, I knew it was either that or I actually was not going to make it. There was no other option for me. And I had a very competent team by the time that decision was made that I knew I was going to be okay. But I think it's important to, as I said, be able to know when you have a diagnosis like that, that you have the right team around you, that you feel confident in the decision that they have put on the table, that you are able to move ahead with your life on a day-to-day basis.
Yes, it's so important, all of those pieces. Some of the things that stand out for me that I think we just need to highlight and emphasize continually is, number one, is second opinions. And as I tell many of my clients and people that I know, being in the medical field, I'm very aware that, providers know what they know based on their didactic training and then their residency and their clinical work. And it a lot of the times is largely dependent on who they were trained by and in what facility they were trained, what patient load they saw when they were trained. And so nobody has all of the answers, and it's absolutely okay. And you're right to get another opinion. And that isn't something that you should feel bad about. A lot of people, I feel like they think, I can't, like they're in a restaurant, they can't say something because somebody's going to spit in their food or something. This is not that scene. This is a different situation. Yeah. So I think it's so important to just give people the validation that it is absolutely okay. And I recommend, in fact, I've had, some of my clients get third opinions, and that's okay. And then the internal work and the team approach, both really important concepts. And we will definitely get to the team approach. Let's first talk about some of the pitfalls, some of the loopholes that you came across through your treatment, and then how that guided you towards the work you do now.
Sure. So, I think firstly that what you were just alluding to, the fact that, it's okay to get second opinions because of the fact that, people, I think, are through their training and so forth, it's not possible to know everything. And I think that highlights one of the areas for me that, going back, I was misdiagnosed when I was acutely ill. So 2 years after my diagnosis. And that was really challenging for me to accept. But once I'd got through my surgery, I'd recovered, I actually realized that, this is more systemic issue, as in healthcare is an incredibly complex system. And it also deals with an incredibly complex entity like the human body, where we're not just like one system operating in itself. We have multiple different systems operating. So it's a very challenging system within people where they have to operate. So that's why we have different specialties. There's cardiac, there's neurosurgery, there's endocrinology. So I think it's very hard of us to say that one specialist has to know everything. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why second opinions and third opinions are very important. So I think for me as a patient, once I'd realized that healthcare is so very complex and often overburdened. Mm-hmm. And that's not just for patients, that's actually for doctors and healthcare teams as well. That I realize that that's most likely the reason that I fell through the cracks, And I think most of us can actually understand that and have probably had experience of that, where there could be like lack of communications. There could be even like delays in treatment. There could be resource problems. And that happens around the world. It's not, it's not specific to where I live in Canada. It's not specific to the US. It's often that is experienced on a global perspective because of the complexity of healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I think that is important to note. And for me, some of the things that I experienced that were challenging were just firstly the navigation of healthcare when you are a complex patient, is that you are often seeing multiple specialists and trying to navigate and make sure that they have the right information. between them, because sometimes they operate in silos and that information is not carried between them. Depending on whether or not you have the right electronic health record or not, mm-hmm. that works between them. And for us here in Canada, when I was diagnosed, there was no form of electronic health record at all. So it was all done by fax. And that can be a challenge and a problem. So I still contain and have a paper copy of every single medical record, specialist record, everything. And I hold that all. So when I go to a specialist appointment, I take this massive red binder with me. And that was actually one of the reasons and was a contributing factor to why I was able to eventually get the care I needed to, is because I knew my medical history. I knew the story of my brain and I, basically, mm-hmm. because I was able to, you know, track everything that was going on with regards their data, basically, their healthcare data. Do they have access to it? And I'm pretty sure you have a similar situation, and you know, for yourselves as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I love the visual of the big red binder, because uh-huh. I actually, anytime that I onboard a new patient and meet them for the first time, the first thing I do is give them a binder with all of the tabs that I think are important. And, yeah. and even though we do have electronic medical records, you know, the problem yeah. is it's not a universal thing.
Correct.
Everybody's got their own portal, their own system, yes. and it's confusing. And so yes. I feel like going old school and getting the papers is just yeah. helpful to have. And that's exactly what I say, have this binder and be ready. So I love that you highlighted that, because I just think it's so important and it empowers people. When we have the knowledge and we have at least the data, we're empowered yes. to have discussions. If we just say, I don't know, the nurse told me the labs were good. You know, I don't know yes. what it was or what the pattern was. And, you know, because they yeah. didn't tell me, you know, and, yeah. but you're empowering yourself by having that information. So it's yeah. just so, so powerful. What do you feel? And I don't know, you know, how much you might know about the U.S. system. I know that you're very involved in a lot of, you know, in fact, you just came back and we'll talk about this from Harvard, from a talk, but you know, what are some of the key differences that you've seen or you know of the Canadian system versus the U.S. system?
Well, I mean, obviously in Canada, we have what we call universal healthcare, meaning that it's a public healthcare system. And what that means is we have universal free access to certain elements of the healthcare system. Now, that means particularly for access to hospital, access to physicians, so our GPs and specialists, and access to certain diagnostics as well. So in particularly some of the imaging and lab tests and so forth. So that is provided by our provincial governments. So that is fantastic, and we're really, really lucky to have that. Then other areas are not provided for, which needs to be paid by the patient, which would be medications that are provided outside of the hospital, and certain other areas, for example, if you had physio, dental, vision, optometry would be provided for and paid for by the patient. So obviously there's a lot of benefits to having that. Having the system is that there's free and universal access, and it's not discriminated upon, you know, based off of any parameters. And we're very lucky to have that. I think some of the challenges that we do face is that we face some issues with wait times, for sure. Mm-hmm. And that can be a challenge in some access areas as well, based off location. And I know for me, some of the areas have definitely been access and have been wait times as well. So I think, you know, there's definitely pros and there's definitely some cons. But I think that, and also the one area that is being looked at as well, is that our system was put together, you know, in the, oh gosh, in the 1950s, 1960s. And obviously the demographics and the requirements and needs of the Canadian population have very much changed since then. So what the government and at the federal and the provincial level actually supplies on a universal healthcare basis, as very much the needs of our population have changed. For example, you know, medication needs, we do need to be funding them more at from a federal and a national level. And that's actually being looked at right now because a lot of people can't afford to actually pay for their medications. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if we're looking at moving to more of a preventative model of medicine, we should be looking at how that should be funded. So I think that there's definitely pros and cons. As I said, one of the challenges that we do face is wait times, mm-hmm. especially for things like, and it depends on the province or the territory that you are based in as to what the wait times are, but we do face challenges with wait times, particularly for specialists and particularly for a lot of the imaging and diagnostics. And for some particular surgeries that are not urgent surgeries, that is one of the challenges that Canada does face based off the healthcare system that we do have.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. And some of those pieces I did know, but wasn't aware of all of that. And I do think that this highlights that even though there are distinct differences in the model of the healthcare system in these two countries, the commonality is there are humans involved in this process and mm-hmm. the both systems, as you mentioned, are overburdened on both yes. ends, you know, both yes. the patient end and the provider end. And because of that, it is so important to have a proactive approach and an empowered approach in your healthcare. And that's mm-hmm. what you speak out for, which is so awesome because I am on board with that. Given that and kind of along those same lines, can you explain your term, the team approach? Mm-hmm. I know we talked about team before, but I love that this means more than just, you know, what our dictionary says. And yes. I would love for you to go over that.
Sure, absolutely. So it was interesting because, you know, when I was diagnosed with my brain tumor, and I was a product manager at the time and very used to a structured approach to, you know, my job. And then I was thrown this curveball of having a brain tumor and not really knowing how, you know, there was no sort of formal plan of what life would look like going forward. And then having to navigate this very complex system. And I felt very out of depth. And so I figured out I needed to try and figure out how to navigate this and sort of calm myself down and feel a bit more in control. So I developed what I call my team approach, and it's an acronym for me. And at that stage as well, having the type of brain tumor I had, sometimes, you know, I had a few memory challenges. So for me, an acronym was highly useful. And so my acronym TEAM stands for T, track, E, educate, A, ask, and M, manage. And so these things were really integral to help me navigate the healthcare system. And I will just add on that there's a couple of other elements that I think are really crucial, which are family, support groups, and doctors, which for me are obviously wouldn't work, the team approach wouldn't work without them. And if I look at the individual elements, for example, T-track, that's anything from, as we're talking about, it's that big red binder. It's keeping track of mm-hmm. anything that's relevant to the patient journey. It could be, you know, your family history, your symptoms, your medications, your health records, and so forth, and putting it in one place that it's easily accessible. And this could be, this is not just applying to anybody who is a patient. It could be somebody who is healthy and, you know, doesn't have any particular problems at this point in time, because it's often when we are suddenly thrown that curveball that's when things go, it's really challenging to figure out how to navigate. So I find the team approach is good for just anybody to know about mm-hmm. because when you are thrown a curveball, that's when I find that you often are left reeling and like common sense goes out the window and you don't know where to turn. So if you know about team, you know, okay, now I need to start tracking. I need to educate myself. I must figure out how to ask questions and I must manage. So that's where it became really useful. And just to let you know, I mean, I use this on a regular basis myself, even still now being a patient still in the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. So I suppose track and then educate. You know, being educated about a condition is really crucial because, you know, if you're educated, you're able to be more informed about what's going on. And when you're more informed, you can actually be involved in decisions that are made with your healthcare team. And I think that's really critical. The one key thing is how to be educated. We have Dr. Google, obviously, these days, mm-hmm. who can help us with those consults in the 2 a.m. morning slot. Mm-hmm. But I think trying to find the best way to be informed is important, because everyone has their needs and their best way. And so maybe chatting to your doctor or your healthcare team and say, you know, I'd like to find out more information and find out if they can assist you in that is really important. And then ask, you know, asking questions is almost, a lot of people feel uncomfortable with this, because there's often that relationship between doctor and patient, which is a work in progress, I would call it, where people are still working on changing that relationship, where the doctor hands you the prescription and you take it and you walk out the door. And we need to work on making that relationship a two-way relationship, where we ask questions of the doctor, they ask questions of us, and it works both ways, because it's important for patients to ask questions, because that's how we create a partnership and a relationship. And so I often start with, you know, why and what if and how can we do this together? But it's not easy. Believe me, I found it hard to start to ask questions of my doctor, because it wasn't a natural thing. I was just used to getting the information, taking it and receiving it and not actually participating. Mm-hmm. But I think that is really critical. So, you know, I often tell people, make a list of the questions before you go into your appointment and prioritize them. You know, this is, I have to ask this question in case the doctor's busy. You know, 1, 2, 3. What are the top three questions I do not want to walk out with that I have not had answered? Because that's really, really critical, is make sure you have questions that you want to ask and make sure you get time to ask them. And then the last one is M, which is manage. You know, I think especially if you have an acute condition or a chronic condition, it can be challenging to manage it all, especially if there's lots of specialists that you're seeing and lots of medications you're having to manage. And it can be overwhelming. And for me, I found just sometimes by setting an objective, you know, whether it was for that appointment or for this month, it made it a lot easier for me. Whether it was from an emotional perspective or just from a general perspective to say, okay, I wanted to make sure that this appointment, I need my migraines to be more under control. It's really a challenge for me at the moment. And it made it easier for the doctor as well to figure out what the basis was for this appointment. So I think that's really important. And, you know, I always say to people, you know, you don't have to manage this by yourself. You can reach out. Teams are more effective anyway with other people on a team. So whether you're reaching out to your doctor and saying, I'm struggling to manage this, is there some way you can help me? Or whether it's to your friends or your family, reach out. Teams are more effective with other people on them. I think that's important. But finding ways to be the manager of your health is really key. We do that in our jobs, we do that in our days, whether we're parents, whether we're caregivers for other people, or whether we're friends. We help other people manage things, and looking through that lens at our healthcare, I think, is really important.
Yes, so valuable, such valuable information. And I love that TEAM is both an acronym and serves the meaning of the actual word of TEAM. And, you know, the key word that stands out for me is participate. And I think that, that, you know, we kind of glide through, you're right, we manage so many other areas of our life and we seem to think that, you know, we can glide through the medical system. And a lot of that kind of comes down from culture. You know, maybe our parents and our parents didn't question authority. You know, they have the answers, so we don't have to get involved in that because they have all the answers, but that's so not the case. I mean, and it's not anything against the medical system, because they do have a lot of answers and they have a lot of knowledge, but just in general, there are so many gaps in understanding and knowledge. And again, they are overburdened. They are human. So you really have to participate. And it's such a much more pleasurable experience. I think it's overwhelming for people to think, how can I participate in, you know, I don't have a medical background, I don't understand the system, and it's overwhelming to think about how could I possibly participate in that. But it really, you know, you breaking it down into TEAM is super helpful for them to hopefully, you know, gather the tools to start. And it's just starting, you know, as with anything else in life, just take the first step, get the red binder, you know, just take the first step. So I love that.
Yeah. That's what I say to people is, you don't have to do it all. You know, if you take one step, That's good enough, because that one step makes you a more activated patient. And that is good enough, because at the end of the day, if we look at, you know, in our global sort of dynamic, we have increasing aging populations, we have increasing in chronic diseases. So the reality is that actually all of us, no matter where we are in our lives, will be a patient one day in some manner or form. So if we know about this and we know, you know, that the aim is that we should be more activated in our healthcare one day, whether it's for us or whether it's for our patient, our parents that could be aging, we know that being activated is the way to go. And that actually, I mean, activated, there's a lot of research on this right now that shows that activated patients have better patient experiences. They're more likely to seek preventative care earlier. They stick to their treatments. You know, they're the ones who are going to engage in healthier behaviors. And the really interesting point is, they actually have lower costs for the healthcare system as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a two-way beneficial relationship for both the patient and the healthcare system as well when we are more participatory and more activated in our healthcare. So there is a shift in the thinking from both the healthcare system and from patients realizing that, you know, I actually need to be more in the game here. And there's a great saying which says that healthcare should be a participatory sport. It is not a spectator sport. And I think that's really great, because we live in our bodies 24/7, yet we see the doctor for maybe 10 minutes whenever we do. So I think we should take faith in that we do know what's going on. And we should speak up about our symptoms, and we should ask questions as to why things are not feeling right. And if they're not feeling right, we should go back and ask another question. Or if our parents have been deliberating going to the doctor, we should say, I think you should get that checked out. Because our body's important, our lives important, and it's important that we be proactive about our health.
Mm-hmm. Yes, to all of that. I can't emphasize that enough. Like, if I could put a big exclamation yeah. point after all that, that's what I would put. Okay. I know that you do a lot of work, and you do such great work, and you speak in many different places and internationally, because you come to the US as well. And I saw that you recently were involved and engaged at the Patient Experience Symposium at Harvard. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that experience and what goes on there. It sounds like an amazing gathering of some great minds in this field. So I would love to hear mm-hmm. more.
So that was really fantastic. That was last week. That was, where were we? Early May. And that was really fantastic. And I spoke there on basically how to activate patients or individuals in their healthcare and basically engage and empower them. And this is just really a passion of mine now, is how to do that. And yeah, it was totally a gathering. It's a smaller symposium, but what I love about it is that you can network and really have great conversations with individuals. And there were some fantastic speakers there. And people that I've known from online that I've been wanting to meet for ages, for example, EP patient Dave de Bronkhart, who is really one of those people who's been instrumental in driving the importance of patients getting their data and how important that is, and just really some crucial case studies and just people showing how important it is for healthcare providers to be aware of the patient experience, how people can do that. There were a lot of patient stories on how patient experience affected them. There were also some great workshops on how to involve patients in patient experience, sort of patient-centered work design. It was highly, highly beneficial. I think it's important for if you know you are involved in this area, to be able to go to conferences like this, to be able to network with people. I don't know. I always find I come away from this. It takes me a while to digest this mm-hmm. information. My brain is still ameliorating all of this type of information. And it was one thing that really stood out was the role of empathy, actually, mm-hmm. In patient experience from a healthcare provider perspective, and also the role of empathy in burnout, actually, in our healthcare providers. And that came up as well. Because at the same time of patients being, really important to look at patient experience, the one challenge that is being faced at this point in time is burnout in our healthcare physicians as well. And that obviously affects the patient experience, as you can imagine. If our healthcare providers are experiencing burnout, that actually can impact us from a patient perspective with a negative patient experience. So that was really interesting to think about from my perspective as a patient. So yeah, that was really, really a good symposium to attend.
Sounds fabulous. I definitely need to get that on my calendar for future mm-hmm. events. And I love that they discussed and engaged in topics on both sides, because I absolutely agree. I think it is so important that we talk about patient experience and how the patients are perceiving what's going on, you know, engaging with what's going on, but also the culture that has led to poor, you know, self-care on the physician's end, you know, yes. poor culture and supporting them and giving them the resources they need and not overburdening them. And I think that discussion definitely needs to be two sides, because yes. sometimes, you know, when physicians understandably hear that, you know, we're so focused on patient experience as they are as well, they start to, you know, think, well, you know, what I would love to give a great patient experience, but I don't have the tools, I don't have the resources, I don't have the time, you yes. know, and so I think that discussion definitely has to continue on both sides. So I'm so happy to hear that that's how that occurred there. What yes. do you hope to see in the medical field, just kind of in general, not necessarily specifically, you know, Canadian or US, but what do you kind of hope to see? What shift do you hope to see in the future?
That's a great question, my goodness. And where do we even, even go? Because I think there is a lot that we have to achieve. And I think that the healthcare system is fundamental, because it's often such a personal choice. For if I look at it from a patient perspective, it's such a personal and important part of my life. Healthcare. But I think if I were to look at it from what I do, I would definitely say, for example, for me, access to data is critical. I need my data. I need my healthcare data. And I think that's instrumental, mm-hmm. is finding a way to make sure that the patient, well, firstly, access to data for patient and healthcare providers and seamless access to it. I think that this is a challenge, and I want to be able to access my data, but I also want to ensure that whoever is treating me, wherever they are treating me, has the access to all of my data. So I think that's a challenge that is faced on a global perspective. As you were saying, even in the US, you have that challenge as well. So I think that needs to be sorted out, because that is just a continual challenge wherever we go and wherever we hear. So I think access to data needs to be sorted out. I think we live in a highly advanced digital era, and I think that needs to be a key focus, is how does that happen and when does it happen? I think one of the other areas, because I'm so passionate about it, is, and because there's a lot of evidence and we're already experiencing some of it already, is we hear about patient-centered care. You know, a lot of the hospitals and care providers are moving towards that model, putting this patient or the care partner at the center of care. But we're starting to hear from a digital perspective, a digital health perspective, of how that is going to happen. You know, well, the patient's going to wear this device and gather this data and so forth. And, you know, if we look out to 2050, they're proposing that the patient will actually be at the center of care, meaning that they will actually wear the devices, have the apps that will actually gather the data, so the patient won't need to go to the facility anymore. And in my mind, I think, well, that's amazing, because that actually helps a lot of individuals who perhaps can't travel to facilities. It really helps a lot of different areas. However, in my mind, I think, well, in order for that patient to be doing all of that stuff, I see someone who has to be activated mm-hmm. to be able to wear those apps, help collect that data, understand why they're collecting that data, and facilitate the point of care requirements. And so I see a real need for both patients and care providers to understand the need for patient activation. And that's not just engagement, that's helping individuals gather the knowledge, the skills, and the confidence to be able to become activated in the healthcare. And I think that is something that needs to become really key in healthcare provision and delivery. So I think that's what I'd really like to see for healthcare coming forward, is access to data for both patients and healthcare providers in a seamless an efficient manner, and an increased focus on patient activation to allow us to have sustainable healthcare delivery.
So important. And what stands out for me, beyond just the, you know, absolute necessity of those things, is the shift in culture. Like, this can't just be a new task list, a new checklist. Like, okay, somebody, you know, somebody up in the, you know, the executive board says, okay, we need access. It really is a shift in culture and understanding why it's important for the patients to have access, and, you know, and teaching them that, because we really have shifted from a culture of our grandparents and parents of, you know, this authority figure. We don't question, we don't ask any questions, and you know, we just, you know, blindly follow, to no, we really do need to be, as you say, activated, engaged, participating, and not spectators. And so that culture shift is important, and so much more important than just gathering a task list of things that we should do moving forward. So I love those two pieces.
And I think just to end off on those two pieces, I think both of those, if we focus on those, one of the areas that we will be able to attack indirectly is the issue of medical error and patient safety, basically. Mm-hmm. So if we're able to access our data, we already know from Open Notes, the Open Notes movement, that if we do that and patients have very good access to their data, that, you know, there's more likely to be less medical error and less errors in their notes. At the same time, if we have patients who are activated as well, you know, they are more likely to, you know, engage in all positive behaviors, and we are more likely to have less issues in that area. So I think that's important as well. Is, for me, you know, medical error is a big challenge, and we know that it is a massive cause of death, both in the US and Canada. So how can we tackle that area? And I think those two areas can indirectly address that as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's only going to benefit all sides of the coin, because if the physicians know that the patients are activated, they are engaged, they are participating, then those patients can help them ask the right questions and help them prevent errors, because it's not like they're just trying to keep everybody in the dark. It's not, that's not an intention of anybody. Yeah. There's no malintention on the physician side. So absolutely. What is exciting for you upcoming this year and maybe into next year? And let's end with where people can find you.
Mm-hmm. So I think what's exciting for me is starting to, you know, really work on patient experience and patient activation in healthcare authorities and with companies, to actually look at how can you activate patients and help them activate themselves and their health and their health care. So that's been a transition for me, and I'm very excited to be doing that, and also looking into the digital health area as well. It's just really about looking and saying, how can I work with my lived experience and drive that and inspire people to put their health in their own hands. And if anyone wants to find me, they can find me at twosteps.ca. And I have all my social media links on there, but they can find me on twosteps.ca. And I've got quite a lot of resources on there, and my books are on there, and blog posts. And hopefully they'll be able to find some information that would be of use to them.
Wonderful, Claire. You do such amazing work. Your story is so powerful. I will include all the links in the show notes so people can find you, listen to your full details of your story, and follow you in the work that you do. I'm so happy, grateful that you were willing to come on here and share your insights. And I'm glad that we met, even if it was virtually. Hopefully one day we'll be in person.
you never know. You never know. I always love it when I'm able to meet people that I've connected with online in person, because it's just fantastic when that happens. And thank you so much for making the time and for reaching out to me. This has been fantastic. I'm so glad we could, you know, share our thoughts and everything like that. And this has been marvelous. So thank you so much for reaching out and for connecting.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Claire, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Minding Wellness Podcast. What an amazing story, truly inspiring journey. I loved my conversation with Claire, and I hope that her insights and her team approach will help you in your own healthcare journey. If you appreciated and enjoyed this episode or any of our previous episodes, I would love it if you would take the time to leave us an iTunes review so others can find us as well. I truly love coming here each week and can't wait to continue to provide you topics on minding your wellness. We'll see you here again next time.